Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is one of my favorite people in the whole world, New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, the man who watches the pennies in New York State. Thank you for being here, Tom. I know how busy you are keeping an eye on where we are going, considering everything that's going on with the federal government and the governor
and his budget address and everything else. There's a lot going on, but Happy New Year, Alan. It's great to start January off doing a show with you.
Well, you know, what can I say? It is great that you're doing this show because you are the best. Okay, let's start out with the governor gives a budget address. And according to the headlines, he wants $1 billion more in taxes. The president of the New York State Senate says, absolutely not. What are you thinking?
Well, we have a real challenge. I mean, there's no doubt that we saw revenues were falling short through much of this year. There certainly was a bounce up in revenue with a lot of activity happening at the end of December because of the changes in the federal tax code. So we saw an infusion of cash. We might very well see some more money before March 31st, the end of the fiscal year, when the Wall Street bonuses start getting paid out. But we go into this budget cycle with over a $4 billion deficit. And then we've got the federal budget cuts, which will start to have an impact, $2 billion or so right there. So, you know, we still have important services that need to be provided, still an interest in doing more for education and health care, particularly some other programmatic improvements. For it all to add up, the governor indicated there has to be some revenue raisers. So the debate will be to what extent, if we want to deliver on those promises on the spending side, are we going to make up for what we need by doing cuts in other areas? And there are some cuts included in this budget, or will we have to do more revenue raises? And some of that might include fees and taxes.
So where are those cuts, Tom DiNapoli?
Well, the first area is obviously across the board with agency spending. The governor has made a commitment to keep spending below 2%. So, you know, keep in mind, we've had contracts settled, increased salaries being paid out. So what happens then is across the board on agencies, they have to tighten their belts in other areas. You're seeing certain program areas stay flat, for instance, aid to localities. There's always been a big push for our cities, particularly for an increase in the AIM funding that is held flat. So, you know, you go through, and we're going through that detailed process now of every single item to see where there are reductions and where it's just being held flat. But it's certainly for many agencies and for certain local assistance programs, it is certainly not a budget that's showing a great increase. It is certainly with the notion that the changes in Washington, not just the tax changes, but how that's going to be paid for with budget cuts that are going to impact the state. This is a budget that is starting to say we're going to really feel the hit from Washington. And it's that triple whammy, Alan. It's the tax reform, the tax cut. It's budget cuts in a host of areas. And the biggest area of concern, health care cuts.
Now, you mentioned AIM funding. There are some people who won't know what that is. Just for point of clarification, what is that?
That's basically revenue sharing for our cities. Aid and incentive to municipalities is about $715 million in the budget. It's been virtually flat for the past 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years. It would be a way to provide relief, especially to many of our upstate cities that have been struggling with their budget challenges. But unfortunately, as opposed to school aid, where we've seen increases, and even in this budget, it's proposed to increase school aid, the AIM funding always seems to be an area that just stays flat.
Well, the education people, of course, and they've had court rulings in their favor and stuff, are saying, we always need more, we need more. I take it that this is not the year to be really banging on the door.
Well, you know, at this point, the increase is about $769 million, less than the little bit over $1 billion last year. It's about 3% on a school year basis. But there are many that argue strongly that the commitment to fulfill the campaign for fiscal equity lawsuit of a number of years ago that was made, that then ran into the Great Recession and the loss of revenue, that money, is, in effect, is still owed. You know, the argument the other way is that once we got through the tough time of the Great Recession. In fact, there have been very healthy increases to school aid. But, Alan, we've seen it how many times. School aid is often the most contentious part of a budget negotiation, usually the last piece of the puzzle to be put to bed before an agreement is announced. So my guess is the $769 million that's being recommended in this budget probably is not the final number, but we'll see where the revenue will come from to get that number higher.
Seems to me I've seen this dance before. So yep. what ends up happening is the governor asks for a little less. The legislature, knowing that the people on the school board are so important to them and every other way, and the kids are important to them, so they come back and they say, okay, we need a little bit of a raise, and they get it. So that's the minuet. Is that basically right? Yeah.
That's fair. And this year, we just put out actually today that the tax cap, every year there's a growth factor that's allowed. It actually is going to be 2% this year for schools. That's the highest growth rate that we've had in about 5 years. So there's going to be a little more flexibility on that and for the school district. So, let's hope that could be worked out. But, hey, it's not only a question of how much money. The other thorny question with school aid, Alan, is where does the money go? And there are many districts that feel that under the current formula, they get shortchanged. It's rare that you find a district that says we're getting our fair share. So that's where you get the additional negotiation, the additional dance to determine not only what is the aggregate amount of school aid increase that you're going to have, but how are you going to distribute it? And then you get into an issue of New York City. So there's obviously a lot still to be worked out. And when there's less money available, always trickier to come up with a resolution.
So Governor Cuomo asks for an extra $1 billion in taxes. Where will that come from? Has he laid out the specifics of who gets taxed more? Is it the millionaires, the billionaires? There's a big fight between Cuomo and Mayor de Blasio over taxing the rich. De Blasio wants to tax the rich more. So what does Cuomo want?
Well, we're looking at all the details of the areas, but one of the big areas for revenue will be in these conversions of nonprofit health entities. As we saw happen in the past, he's staking a lot on a significant increase that would come there. Whether that would ever be fully realized remains to be seen. He had a concern that I think many had as well, that the federal government, as part of the tax reform, did not deal with the so-called carried interest loophole that allows certain profits from private investment funds to be subject to a lower tax. He would propose, we have to do this regionally, along with Massachusetts and Connecticut and Jersey, to have a multi-state approach to have that higher tax on carried interest. So the private equity folks probably wouldn't like that, but that would be another example of what he's looking at. We have to see more detail, as far as money for the MTA. But the governor certainly put out there that there will be some version of a congestion pricing. He indicated that it would not include tolling of bridges, but that report has not come out yet. We'll have to see exactly what that says. So there's quite a list there of changes that I'm sure will be, again, part of that big give and take.
So you and I have one thing in common. There was an old folk song, he slept at the head, I slept at the foot. But we have something in common, and that is that we're both worried, aren't we? We're worried because I have my life's pension in a Tia Cref account, and you are the sole trustee for the investments in New York State. And right now, the stock market's doing pretty good. You're a hero. But if it turns around and there's a crash, you'll be a bum. So what are you doing about that?
Well, it's an important question because when the market does well, and I'm sure you can appreciate this, everybody says, how come you don't have more money in the stock market? And then when the market does poorly and it tanked like it did, in 08 and 09, people say, well, how come you put so much risky investments in the stock market? What we try to do is, as much as possible, is keep our portfolio diversified. A significant part of our money certainly is invested in public equities, in the stock market, in the big name stocks that over time tend to be very, very reliable. And much of that is passively invested through index funds. So that has served us well over the long haul. But to counter when this current bull market will go in the other direction, we certainly have investments in private equity, in real estate. We don't do too much in hedge funds, and we're doing less, but we have some money there, real assets. Of course, fixed income, treasuries, other fixed income vehicles. The problem with fixed income, Alan, is it's the safest place to put your money. It's also the place that you don't make a lot of money these days, given how, you know, low the interest rates are. So we have confidence in our long-term asset allocation and our goal. We actually passed the $200 billion mark for the size of our pension fund for the first time at the end of September. End of December is going to be even higher. Our long-term goal is 7%. It's looking good that we have one more quarter to go that we'll be able to meet that mark again. But we take the perspective we're in for the long haul. We're not going to change our strategy just because the market's high today, put more money in the market. What happens is if you try to game it or time it that way, by the time you make your moves, the market's changed again, and you lose out. So slow and steady, and that's something a pension fund can do. We're a perpetual investor with a long-term horizon.
So, Tom DiNapoli, you know, a lot of people call me and say, what is all this stuff about index funds? What is an index fund?
There's like the Russell 3000. You have a mix of stocks that's set up, different sectors and then different companies with different weights within each sector. And you put your money there and you pretty much let it ride. You know, you put it in, you let it go over a period of years. And, you know, even Warren Buffett's been engaged in the debate lately as opposed to active. Right? So active management would be you set up what your portfolio is, where you're putting your money, which companies and which stocks and which sectors. And you say, all right, they didn't do so good today or this week or this month, I'm going to change it. So active management is more or less a hands-on aggressive strategy that you're going to keep changing your decisions on a somewhat regular basis, as opposed to passive index investing where you put the money in and you let it ride over months, if not years. And many argue that over the long haul, you do as well, if not better, with the index funds. One of the reasons is when you do active management, you're usually paying somebody for that financial expertise to make those judgments on where to put the money. So the fee structure is much higher in active management. So one of the efficiencies of indexing over long term is that you have very low fees. You set it up, and once it's set up, you let it ride.
Okay, I get that. Do your people ever look and say, okay, in order to protect ourselves, we have to do a sort of seesaw. If one thing goes up, then it's likely that the other thing will go down, and we have to juxtapose these against each other.
To an extent, Al, but, you know, we're so big. You know, when you're $200 billion, yeah. You know, we're kind of everywhere. So it really starts with that asset allocation. What percentage in public equity, what percentage in private equity, what percentage in real assets and so on, and then having confidence in it to let it ride. And we do that in a very detailed way once every 5 years. Now, that doesn't mean that if we see some significant market shifts that we might not change and do a short-term tactical move. So, for instance, we've lowered our allocation to hedge funds rather significantly. We just see that as an area that hadn't been performing and it has very high fees. So, yes, within a given year, we might do some tactical changes. But if we see valuations going very, very high and our asset allocation is out of whack, right? So stock market is very high. Stocks are very costly. It looks like now we are overweight in public equities because of that, we will do what we call a rebalancing, and we'll move some of that money into some of the other areas. So, yeah, it's always a constant fine-tuning, but we very much stick to the broad parameters of that asset allocation that every 5 years we do a very deep analysis of.
Now, Tom, a lot of people in hedge funds want your business. I mean, you got $200 billion to invest, right? And that's where former controllers have gotten themselves into trouble because, you know, people start making campaign contributions. They start coming on one way or another. How do you watch out for that?
Well, you're absolutely right. I mean, that was a big part of the problem, not just in hedge funds, although that was one of the areas, but in the alternatives generally. So we've done a couple of things. First of all, we've eliminated what was really the root of the corruption in the past, and that was the use of placement agents, middlemen who put deals together. And unfortunately, as we saw with my predecessor, there were certain favored placement agents that got business steered to them and then other favors to the benefit of some of the employees at the fund and to the controller at the time himself. So we've eliminated the role of placement agent. We will not do a deal involving a placement agent.
So who does that now?
People come directly. People come direct. You don't need someone to introduce us to introduce you to us. We are there. We're available. You have your people come to us directly, and we'll discuss with you directly what the investment opportunity is. Campaign contributions. We were the first to implement something the SEC under Arthur Levitt Jr. tried to do a number of years ago, to say that if you contribute to the controller race, controller campaign, then you can't do business with the fund for a period of years. We Wow. implemented that on our own. That had a very chilling effect. People who even thought remotely they may one day want to negotiate, they said, you know what, it doesn't make sense to contribute there anymore. And then the SEC adopted this as a standard across the industry. So we led the way, but there is that prohibition on a campaign donation. So that's out of the equation as well.
So you've got to really keep your eye on the guys who are doing this work for you, too, because, you know, they're tempting targets. And I know you have a wonderful guy who's basically your chief investigator, who keeps a sharp eye out.
We also set up that Office of Inspector General, and that was primarily set up. Steve Hamilton's in that position.
He's a wonderful man. I know him. He's great.
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's a fan of yours. But his job is to, if he hears of anything that's amiss, or if someone sees something wrong and they want to know where to report it confidentially, they can go to Steve Hamilton as the Inspector General, and then he can refer it out to criminal authorities. And, you know, we are ever vigilant. You can never assume that people are always going to be as honest as they need to be. You know, we've had a retraining of all of our folks on ethics, and I keep saying it's not just about getting great results. We have to get it done the right way with a sense of ethics and integrity. Reputation is important. People are not going to want to do business with us if they feel we're not doing it in an ethical way.
So now a lot of people are saying that now that Donald Trump has come out with his new tax bill, that many New Yorkers with a lot of money will be moving to Florida or other places, or Texas with lower taxes. Do we see any evidence of that?
You know, there's always some anecdotal evidence. I don't know that in reality it's picked up yet. It's all kind of new. Everybody's trying to assess the impact. I think for some people, especially if they already have a second home, to change their legal address to get a tax advantage is very possible. I worry also, Alan, about the folks who aren't so rich. They just have one home, and they've already been paying very high taxes in New York, especially some of our downstate friends. What are they going to do? They can't just switch their address. They may have to move and leave. The governor was absolutely right from the beginning to point out how devastating this cap of state and local tax deductibility is going to affect us in New York. I don't think the governor has understated the problem at all. And I also give Governor Cuomo credit. As part of the budget presentation, as you heard, he is exploring some very creative and innovative, perhaps problematic, strategies for us to deal with this. So this notion of replacing the state income tax with a payroll tax, and we're waiting, you know, this week there'll be some report coming out from Tax and Finance to talk about how we perhaps could accomplish that. It has a fair amount of complexity, but it could be a way for us to get around the penalty of the $10,000 cap on state and local taxes. Also exploring the notion of setting up, in effect, a charitable trust to be an alternative way to pay your state income tax obligation, and again, get around the cap that the federal government has. Now, how you set that up, whether the IRS would approve that, we don't know. But I think Governor Cuomo has certainly identified the problem accurately. What a coincidence. California, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, blue states are the ones that are really going to get hurt. And he's saying we're not going to take it lying down. So it's really a three-pronged approach. A lawsuit to try to overturn the tax reform, supporting legislation that some of our congressional representatives here in New York State are filing. I think it's Nita Lowey and perhaps Peter King are filing something in this regard. And number three, to come up with a different strategy, be it a payroll tax or a charitable trust. So I think Governor Cuomo is really being sensitive to what's going to happen to our taxpayers and to really our whole economy. It could really throw the economy of New York in tailspin. And what's the overall context? We talked about this on one of your earlier shows. We've done an updated version of the old Moynihan Report. How much does New York send to Washington versus what we get back? We did a report of that a few years ago, and we were getting back 91 cents for every dollar we sent. We updated that number to 2016 numbers. Now it's down to 84 cents that we're getting back for every dollar. That's before the federal budget cuts and before these tax changes.
That ain't right.
The balance is going to get worse.
Okay, so let's go to politics. You know, there have been those people who have been calling for you to primary Governor Cuomo. I take it you're not going to do that.
I am proudly running for re-election for state controller.
Okay, now there's also news that there are people who want to replace Kathy Hochul, the lieutenant governor, with somebody like Lovely Warren from Rochester. Do you think that that's in the cards?
As best as I could tell, that's a rumor that I don't know where it started. All indications are that Kathy Hochul is running again, and I think she does a fine job as lieutenant governor.
By the way, I don't want anybody to think in this age of political correctness that when I called her Lovely Warren, that I was being fresh. That is her name. So I think we have to understand that, right?
And she's a fine person, a very hardworking mayor of Rochester.
Okay. And so I want to know whether or not you see anybody coming up in politics in New York State who could offer the governor a rough time. His numbers are up. He's got a fortune in the bank. He's got some problems, obviously, that some of his former fellows are up for trial, corruption trials. So do you think he has any issues that he has to worry about?
Well, you can't take any election for granted. We always knew that. But November of 2016 sure drove that point home. So anything is possible. But I think, you know, where we stand now in the beginning of 18, I think the governor has a strong record of accomplishment. I think that on some of the issues where there had been friction within the party, I think he's moved to quell some of the. Yeah, he's moved on a number of issues that I think puts him in a stronger position with all wings of the party. Certainly having the kind of resources he has makes a big difference. Cuomo is still a great brand name in New York state politics. He's working very hard. He's been very clear on taking on the Trump agenda. So, you know, I think he's in strong shape within the party. The Republican Party, as you know, each week that goes by, whatever names they have, the list gets shorter and shorter.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a very weak statewide Republican Party that my guess is will do all that they can to focus on keeping the Senate, the state Senate, and saving as many of their congressional Republicans as they can. A number of those congressional seats, Alan, are going to be very, very competitive, even seats that maybe 2 years ago weren't so competitive. I think the outrage to what's happening with the implementation of the Trump agenda in New York is very unpopular, and I think some Republicans are going to be losing their seats because of that.
I certainly agree with you about that. But very quickly, Ken Lovett, our favorite from the New York Daily News, has reported, and we only have a minute on this one, that Brian Benjamin, Senator Brian Benjamin, a Democrat, wants a bill barring pension funds, your pension funds that you fund, from investing in private prison companies. Is this too obscure, or is it something that you're considering?
No, well, actually, we've significantly reduced our holdings there. Our friend Randy Credico raised this issue over time. So we just have a little bit left, again, that's in some of those index funds. But, you know, that is certainly not an area where we see great profitability anyway. So we've significantly reduced the holdings there. And my expectations, we probably would reduce it even further.
Tom DiNapoli, old friend, and you are not old, but I am.
We both are. Hey, we're aging gracefully.
I thank you so much for giving us all this time. You're always great. We are out of time. Our guest is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, and we thank you again, Tom, for being with us.
Great. Thanks, Alan.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.